Hello and welcome to the Humans Invent Cycling Podcast coming from Florence and the World Road Race Championships. My name is Richard Moore and I'm joined by the birthday boy, Owen Slott of The Times.
What a treat to come on my birthday.
Yeah, I think we're going to sing happy birthday to you later on this podcast.
Later on, yeah. Not on the podcast.
And I'm joined also by Daniel Freeb, a very tired Daniel Freeb, but tired and tanned.
Very tanned, aren't I?
Well, we've just watched the women's road race, won by Marianne Vos, who's probably the world's greatest ever female cyclist. Interestingly, we went to see Lizzie Armistead the other day, Owen, didn't we? And she said that she didn't think Marianne Vos was a favourite. She's had not a great season by her standards. She's been dabbling in a bit of everything this year. And so I was quite surprised to see the way that she won that race.
But she does have phenomenal range, Vos, doesn't she, in terms of the types of bike riding that she does.
Mm-hmm.
Mountain biking, cyclocross, a bit of track, unicycling. Did she do for unicycling as well? Is there a world championship?
Cycling polo?
Slotto, just because it's your birthday doesn't mean this can be all frivolous.
Have you started drinking already?
No, sorry, I'm just trying to raise my game for this podcast. But she does do it. I mean, it's extraordinary what she does.
She does a lot of cycling, doesn't she?
Yeah, but on different types of bikes. You know, most people have a specialism on their bike.
This doesn't sound like a very specialised podcast at this point, does it?
Owen, you sang in her press conference there. I couldn't go to that. What did she say?
She said the sort of standard things, like she was very happy.
Breaking news.
I'm trying to think of something that would...
Did she say anything about her form this year that perhaps this is maybe a slight surprise, certainly compared to last year?
No, she didn't. She's talked a lot about her team, and she had one teammate who was with her until the last lap, and that was clearly significant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were three Italians, two Dutch, and then a bunch of girls solo, and the two teams had obviously a significant advantage, and the teamwork, I think, was effective for Vos.
Yeah, again, Lizzie said that the Italian team was very strong as a climbing team, and she thought they were going to make the race difficult, and they did. They really did.
But they slightly stitched up their own ace
well,
in the pack.
Unless you've got Marianne Vos, it's very difficult,
well,
isn't
that's
it?
The thing, isn't it? I think the course, the women's race, proved just how hard this course can be, and if there is one rider who's clearly superior, I don't think there's an awful lot can do to counteract that rider. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, it seems to have been a harder course than perhaps we expected. I mean, the talk before this week was that the course was going to be very hard and very selective. But then a couple of the earlier races, the men's under 23, for example, the winner of that race, Matej Moric, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Slovenian, he said afterwards that it wasn't actually as hard as he had expected it to be. But having said that, every road race so far, and we're talking before the men's road race, but every road race so far has been won by a lone winner, which does testify to it being quite a...
Yeah,
certainly that last climb being a real springboard for a late...
not a lot of riders coming back on. Once riders lose contact, that tends to be it. I said earlier, Rich, it reminded me a lot of Mendrisio, the course, and... Yeah, that was a real war of attrition. Again, because of the way it was ridden. I mean, a lot depends tomorrow on the size of the break that goes up the road early. If it's very, very innocuous and not too big, then it should be fairly settled behind for a good while anyway.
We don't want to talk about tomorrow too much, because this podcast will probably be aired while the race
Believe
is on.
Believe it or not, I'm also trying to watch Arsenal on here.
Oh, Daniel.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. Interviews and analysis. We've got the big talking points covered.
I did mention Moric, the Slovenian, who won the under 23. He also won the junior world road race last year, and it's the first time that's been done, that particular double. And he won in very impressive fashion. And he was even more impressive afterwards in the press conference, where he spoke in eloquent, articulate English and was charismatic and fluent, and a real contrast, I have to say, to the UCI Congress, which I just sat through, and he was more...
It was magnificent.
We're going to talk about the UCI Congress in the next part, but I want to introduce a bit of Moric speaking, because I recorded some of his press conference, and you'll hear for yourself. I mean, there were three questions that he was asked. he was asked about being such a young rider, and what can he do, how does he see himself developing. He signed for Cannondale for next year, so he'll join Peter Sagan there. He was asked about Slovenia, and
he's
about
a, you know, it's a different country, don't you, Rich?
I do know it's a different country. Slovakia. yeah
no, but that's just a nice way of educating.
He's also very he's also a very different kind of character to Sagan, who's sort of more taciturn. He was also asked about Peter Sagan and whether he thinks Sagan can win on Sunday. I don't think that questioner had confused Slovenia and Slovakia. So anyway, here's Mohoric, the men's under-23 winner.
The first thing I have to tell is that my team did a great, great, great job today. They did everything as we said before the race. We said we have to have a guy in the breakaway. We did it. It was Jakob Osner who did the first breakaway, and then also Tim Mikko who did the second breakaway. And then I tried to be with the best guys when it really started. The hard part of the course. I know that I'm still a young rider and that I have to develop steady and slow. I won't try to be to go with the head to the wall, we say in Slovenia. I do it slowly and steadily and try to become a good athlete one day. It is quite a difference when talking to go from the juniors to the under-23. Especially because we have much more gears. We have like 11 Teuton behind, and it makes a difference because in the junior it's never hard on the flat course because all the guys have 50 to 14 gear, so we can go maybe 55k an hour. But here on the elite category, under 23, we can go 65, 70 per hour on the flat part of the courses, but and also the length. Here races are much longer, and perhaps it's also more climbing, so it is a big difference. That's in my opinion, because I'm not sure if the race of the pros will be just a bit like ours. It was not as difficult as I thought it would be. We were not going hard all day long, which I doubt the pros will do. It's not as hard because the climb of the Fiesole has a very low gradient, and it's like 30 or also 40 kilometers an hour uphill. So the wind is quite a factor, and if you're behind, I don't know, 10, 20 position, you can save a lot of energy. And the thing that makes a difference on this course is the short, steep climb a little bit further on. And my opinion is if the race of the pros will be like ours, Sagan has chances because it's not as hard as it might look, also on television, I think. Yeah, and Slovenia, capital city is Ljubljana. It's a small country, neighbor of the Italy and Austria. We have 2 million of people, so we are a small country, but we are, I would say, big heart. And we are a cycling developed country. We have some great cyclists, Sjani Brajkovic, perhaps Christian Horan. We have, I think, more than 10 riders in the top level of the cycling. In the pros, so I am proud to be a Slovenian, and I really like our country. It's like perfect for the training. We have descents, we have uphills, we have downhills, we have flat streets. It is beautiful. I would recommend it to all to visit it. It's just amazing.
You're listening to the Humans Invent Cycling Podcast, powered by Sharp.
So that was Matej Mohoric, as you heard there, pretty impressive, destined for great things, I think. This morning we had the men's junior road race, which was won by Matthew van der Poel, who is the son of Audrey van der Poel, who was a very good rider in his day, winner of several classics and stages of the tour, things like that. A young British rider, Theo Gegenhart, went into that race with
Rich,
great...
Do you know the story behind his name?
The story behind his name?
Yeah.
Well, he was called Theo Gegenhart when he was born.
Is Theo a common name?
Irish.
Is it?
Irish.
It's not after the Tao
teaching. No, it's not. No. It's not Chinese, Daniel. It's Irish. Oh. I spoke to him the other day, and he's got this Irish name, Theo Gegenhart. It certainly stands out, the name. I think people are kind of
When you
not
asked
quite
that
sure.
question, Daniel, it was as if you were going to flourish the answer before us.
Yeah.
Sounded like you had some inside knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, I do on the. If you want to know about the Tao Te Ching,
it's an Irish name, but he
Taoism.
So he's an Irish name. His father is from Edinburgh in Scotland, and he was raised in Hackney. And I gather that Scotland are making overtures for him to ride the Commonwealth Games for Scotland next year. So that's very exciting for me.
Maybe the Olympics in Rio as well.
For Scotland, yeah, if it's an independent team, yeah, maybe. Anyway,
that's another conversation.
He's a great talent, a great prospect. He's also a very, very eloquent chap who we're going to get on the podcast when we're back in London. We're going to have him as a guest in one of our podcasts.
But what actually happened to him today? He stopped, didn't he?
He broke his chain snapped, and he had to change. He had to run up the hill and then change bikes, so he was severely disadvantaged.
Doesn't
help at all. Scott Davis was seventh. Scott Davis was kind of plan B, and he was seventh, which is a very good ride. But afterwards, I spoke to both Tao and to Matt Winston, the junior coach, who's done a great job with them this year. And here they are, Tao first, who was understandably quite upset. And then there's Matt talking about what happened to the juniors today. Tao, disappointing outcome for you today. Can you just tell us what happened?
Yeah, the race was going perfectly. Our big break went, but we took the responsibility second time up the climb, and everyone was, you know, watching us, and they knew we were going to do something, and we brought it down a lot, and I was feeling amazing, probably best I've felt all year, to be honest. As some people would say, no chain, which quite literally happened about 20k later. It just snapped on the steep climb. I think it was third time up. It was probably worst possible timing because the bunch was completely strung out, so I had to wait probably a minute and a half, run up the climb as far as possible to the top, get a spare bike. By the top of the next long climb, I was within about probably 15 seconds of the bunch, but that was as close as I could get. They were going full gas and it was splitting up, and just from then I just started throwing up and couldn't really do anything at all. So
did you feel like the feel like it was a problem with the chain before, or it was just quite sudden?
It was fine from the start, and then third time up the long climb, I said to the lads to save himself a little bit, because it was jumping a lot. I couldn't really pedal without it jumping, so I knew there must be a little problem. I think someone had just touched it and it got bent on one of the links, and then, yeah, like I say, on the steep when I put the power down, it snapped. So
you managed to stay on the bike?
Yeah, I thought the chain had come off, so I looked down and then there's nothing there, so there's nothing you can really do.
Massive disappointment, because you had really high hopes coming into this race, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of this sport, and anything can happen, so I just go on, move forward. This is my last race of the year. It's a shame to end juniors in such a bad way, but this will happen, so nothing we can do. Scott salvaged a good result out of it, so I'm pleased for him, and for me, I just look forward. It's just another race, really. It's a big, big, big one. It's been a target all year, but there's nothing else I can do, really.
So, Matt, can you talk us through the race?
The plan was obviously to go for Tao, off form kind of through the year, but we always had Scott kind of there in a little bit of reserve for kind of if anything should happen to Tao. So big break went away on the first lap. Kind of didn't expect the group to be so big, really, and there's a lot of nations represented, so straight away that kind of put us on the not on the back foot, but kind of forced us to start riding fairly early doors, which the boys did a cracking job. And we kind of, the gap was kind of holding around four minutes all the time. So we kind of called Scott onto the front as well as James and Matt. And we brought that down then to kind of 2.5 minutes. So more manageable size. And I think that's when the problem started occurring, really, for Tao and the bike. The chain started jumping a little bit, which, you know, with the peloton being the way it is and the size it is, little touch or whatever can just send the mech out and cause that to start jumping them. And then obviously Tao kind of snaps his chain on the steep climb, spare bike, and Scott kind of stayed nice and composed then and kind of got a result. Scott got a really good result there, you know. Like, everyone's a little bit disappointed about not getting a medal, but got to remember, top 10 at the Junior Worlds is an absolutely cracking result for anybody. And Scott did a good job there, because he got distance over the top of this short climb with 5k to go, got back on and kind of sprinted in for 7th place, and that's really good.
And it's the biggest race of the year, obviously, but it's not the only race of the year, and you've had a pretty solid, good season with these guys, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I just said to Tao. You know, at the end of the day, when a rider's going to move on, like Tao is, the Junior World Champs is quite small fry, and we still kind of come to these races for development, and the lads will have learnt a cracking lesson today that sometimes doesn't always go your way. You can come into the race as one of the, I don't like to use the word favourites, because, you know, it's a junior race and anybody can turn up, but go into a race where other teams are watching you, and And stuff does go wrong. People lose grand tours over puncturing in the crosswind section when the race is on. Stuff does go wrong, and they'll have learnt a lot today. You know, you can probably say they'll have learnt as many lessons today as if we'd won the world, which is kind of what it's about, and that's why we bring the juniors to these. And when they look back in 5, 6, 7 years' time, if they go on to win senior medals, junior worlds actually mean nothing, really, in the grand scheme of things. It means a lot to the guys today, but down the line, it's kind of a good development opportunity.
I'm sure it's hard to get that idea across to them today, though, isn't it, in the immediate aftermath of the race?
Yeah, I kind of think Teo kind of understands the bigger picture a lot, though, and kind of does understand that's what it's about at the end of the day. And, you know, he will kind of go on and keep developing, and that's what it's about. But it'll take a few days for him to get over it, I'm sure. But that's a good thing, though, because it shows how passionate they are, and how passionate they are as a team, that they will all focus on one goal. And it's hard to get junior riders to do that. And to be honest, we've been the strongest junior team all year, and the guys have committed to each other every single race, and they've rode on the front all day, every day for each other. And it's not just Teo we ride for, we ride for other guys as well, and set up different race scenarios, so everybody's kind of gets a little bit of a go of being kind of the team leader. And today it didn't come off. We had a mechanical problem, nothing wrong with anybody's legs, it's just the way it goes, so that's the sport, so yeah.
The Cycling Podcast with humansinvent.com. Innovation, craftsmanship and design.
Welcome back to Humans Invent Cycling Podcast with Daniel Freeb and Owen Slott, the birthday boy. We're going to talk a little bit about the UCI Congress and the election of Brian Cookson to UCI President, which Owen and I had the great misfortune to attend.
Misfortune? I'd say call it a dubious pleasure.
A dubious pleasure. We are then going to preview tomorrow's men's road race. This will probably be broadcast just before then, so it's something to listen to while the race is on, and you can see just how wrong we were in our predictions. First of all, before we get into the UCI Congress, I mentioned how unimpressive a lot of the speakers were during the UCI Congress. There was one exception to that, so I would like to introduce Ciro at this point.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
Okay, that was Ciro introducing Pedaleur de Charme. It's actually Orateur de Charme. Orateur de Charme. Is that okay, Daniel?
Okay.
Is the French okay? Would you prefer something else?
No, it's fine. It's okay. Literally okay.
Okay, thanks.
Should we not have an Italian version?
Yeah, I'd like to nominate for that Richard Leggett of New Zealand, who was a very impressive speaker from the floor, former first-class cricketer for Canterbury. And he was one of the real impressive voices during the UCI Congress. Owen, what did you take away from the UCI Congress?
Do we not need to explain why Richard was...
Describe it. Describe what happened. Describe your day. I know you can read this in the Times, but not everybody can afford to subscribe to the Times.
Well, I have to say that these sort of political things aren't really what I got into sports journalism for. And so I went slightly heavy-hearted, thinking it was going to be, you know, a dry old thing. And it was a dry old thing, really. But to see the UCI playing out this big political moment like that was quite astonishing, because they were embarrassing. They knew they were embarrassing as well. But not only were they stuck in petty legal corridors of constitutional argument, but they didn't seem to have worked out how the whole day was going to run, or even how to vote. I mean, one of the most magnificent moments of farce in the whole day was when they had a show of hands. So they had a hand vote on whether the vote they were going to take afterwards was going to be a secret vote or another hand vote. I mean, that was a sort of entertainment that was on the show. So it was kind of high farce. I enjoyed a bit of that.
And why is this? I wasn't there, so speaking from a position of relative naivety, why were press allowed to witness all of this? Is that common practice?
Well, I've never attended a UCI Congress before, nor have I ever wanted to, so I can't answer that question.
And Slotter, with your very broad experience across sports,
but then again,
is this common for...
Well, I've seen a bit of FIFA action.
Yeah.
And FIFA do they do quite a lot behind closed doors, but I've seen the presidential election and the debate and stuff like that, and the media allowed in the back to witness that as well. That was kind of... I mean, FIFA's got a very bad name for the way its politics are run, or not run, or misrun, I guess.
Have you ever seen anything on a scale of embarrassment similar to that, in terms of just sheer haplessness?
No, because when you watch FIFA, it's sometimes astonishing that power can be brandished and that people can will allow that to happen. Whereas the UCI was... they were attempting to chuck power around, and Pat McQuaid, to be fair, did a pretty good job of it, but the haplessness was on a totally different level. It was just phenomenal, breathtaking.
Yeah, we could go into, you know, there was a moment where they were going down sort of legal cul-de-sacs of arguments, where at one point there was an invitation to 10 federations to each speak for 5 minutes, yeah. Or 9 federations speak for 5 minutes, and that just seemed, I don't know what that was intended to achieve. It was utterly pointless.
And did those federations take
they spoke for 5 minutes, and some spoke well and some didn't speak well, but I don't know what the outcome was supposed to be of that. Did you understand what the outcome was supposed to be?
Well, I think that was part of the sort of the a nod to democracy, in that if people wanted to give their opinion, then they should be allowed to. So, to a certain extent, that was a reasonable thing to do. But all they did was just tie themselves in knots and disagree and fail to establish anything. But I think we need to explain what this Richard Leggett did, because at one stage, it appeared that Pat McQuaid was just running off with the narrative of the day, and Richard Leggett, this Kiwi guy, just put up his hand and said, "I want to say something." And his point was very clear, that Mr. McQuaid, what you're doing is illegal.
The proposed amendments to the Constitution should not come into force at this point. It should be delayed a year.
Yeah, he basically said to McQuaid, "You can't just change the rules here and now. We've got to vote on it." And that was a real line in the sand, which was basically, I think, gave a lot of other people encouragement to go, well, hang on a sec, he's right here. You can't just change the rules so they suit yourselves. And I think that kind of was one of the moments that helped the whole thing drift in Brian Cookson's direction.
Yeah, one very odd moment right at the start was the Ethics Commission report, and Peter Zevenbergen, the deeply unimpressive head of the Ethics Commission, who kind of bumbled his way through a series of issues, one of which was an allegation from the Hellenic Cycling Federation that the Cookson camp had offered a €25,000 bribe to the Greeks for a vote for Cookson. And their recommendation on that basis was that there shouldn't be an election, there shouldn't have been an election, in order to give them time to investigate that allegation. Now, that recommendation was then just completely ignored.
Yeah, that was strange. That looked like, the minute that was mentioned, I think lots of people sort of looking at each other knowingly, like going, "Oh, this is the rabbit out of the hat that everyone thought McQuaid was going to pull." I think we just said that though the allegation was that a bribe had, or that €25,000 had been offered to the Greeks, they weren't specific
about who it had come from.
It was in order to vote for Cookson, but it wasn't. They didn't say that Cookson had arrived, and
Cookson did describe it as preposterous afterwards, and said that's not how he operates. And I think we know him fairly well, Brian Cookson. You know, a lot of people don't, and I think he is a sort of quiet leader. He's been involved in British cycling as president since 1997, but he's not been particularly prominent or visible in that role, and I think that is probably a good thing.
What do you chaps make of Makarov's backing of Cookson? His very vocal backing of Cookson. I mean, Igor Makarov, you should probably explain. Rich, I'm about to cough, so you can explain.
Igor Makarov is Igor Makarov is a Russian billionaire who owns the Katusha team.
I'm going to cough again. Go on.
He's president of the Russian Cycling Federation as well, isn't he?
He used to be a pro rider, didn't he?
He used to be a pro rider.
Of course.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot of credentials.
Do we know much about Makarov beyond that?
He fell out with... He had a very acrimonious falling out with Andrei Shmyl.
Mm-hmm.
When Shmyl was in charge of the Katusha team. I understand he was also interested in setting up a tour of Moscow, which may yet happen.
Mm-hmm. Was he involved in the proposed Sochi race as well?
Yeah.
So he's a mover and a shaker.
Yeah, he's a player.
He's the Gazprom...
Yeah. He's a massive player, and you know, Cookson was asked today whether, you know, how involved he was, and he said he's an important person, cycling like lots of other people, but he wasn't beholden to him, I suppose.
Because obviously, Slotto, if we're talking about big sums of money being thrown around in exchange for votes, then you know, without speculating too much, Makarov is a guy with a lot of money, and he dearly wanted Cookson to be president.
I think his backing of Cookson at one stage looked as if it could damage him rather than help him.
Yeah.
It was Makarov who bankrolled this investigation into alleged foul play
which
by
again,
McQuaid.
During the Congress, seemed to be a bit of a... the atmosphere to me seemed to be there was a lot of hostility, a lot of resentment of the fact that this had not been leaked. Yeah.
Because this guy, he was so obviously aggressive against McQuaid that there was a sympathy vote for McQuaid on the back of it.
Now, you have to have some sympathy with McQuaid because there is this question, why was the dossier not... I can understand why it wasn't made public, but why... And Makarov's argument was that he didn't want to hand over to the Ethics Commission because he didn't believe the Ethics Commission was entirely independent. That's a perfectly justified fear, perhaps, but handing it over to the Ethics Commission doesn't mean the dossier goes away or it's they can't delete it. You know, he can hold on to a copy of it. And so if they don't take action on it, then he can hand it on to somebody else. To not give them it at all seems slightly strange, no?
Well, it seems strange that the voting delegates weren't shown it. It achieved nothing apart from...
creating some resentment.
Resentment and people sort of a general shrugging of shoulders. I mean, it has been given to an authority. It's been given to US ARDA. So the suggestion was that it was... Just someone said in the Congress yesterday, what if this document was just 30 blank pages? We don't know if it was 30 blank pages. Well, the fact that it's been handed to USARDA doesn't prove but suggests that there was something written.
There was a summary of it, of course, in Velo News, and it arrived at the offices of Velo News in a blank envelope with no...
In an unmarked black car.
Unmarked.
Is that true?
No, I don't know about the unmarked black
windows.
Car.
Yeah.
I don't know about
driven
that.
By a
there, was certainly, there was certainly no indication of where it had come from, which is, you know, adds to the sort of cloak and dagger feel of it all. And then, the Congress was going absolutely nowhere. It was sinking into a quagmire of argument and counter-argument. It was literally going nowhere. We were going to be there all weekend. And then, dramatically... Ready, Steady, Cookson. Well, he dramatically, and this is the question mark about Brian Cookson. And one thing I want to say about Brian Cookson is that my impression of him has been over sort of almost 10 years that I've known him and dealt with him a little bit has been that he's very straight and he has, I think, integrity, but he doesn't necessarily have strong leadership qualities, or that's what I
charisma.
Thought. He doesn't have a lot of charisma. But he stood up, he marched towards the lectern, and he said, "Enough of this nonsense, let's get on with the vote."
Yeah.
Is that a good accent?
Yeah, no, I think it was good, but I think you need a little drum roll before that. It was like a drum roll moment and a symbol.
It was dramatic.
it was.
And I think that for people who were
slithering... We were all shaken out of our snoring.
We were. One woke up at that point. But... It was the moment that everything changed, and people who were swithering, perhaps at that point, decided that this guy had a bit of steel after all.
That was the moment he saved the world.
We'll
look back on that moment.
I saw him last night in a bar in a hotel, and I asked him whether that had been planned. I asked him whether that had been planned, he paused and said, "I wouldn't say planned." I'm going to stop doing that. I wouldn't say plan, but he kind of hinted that he had an idea that the Congress, he said having attended previous Congress, he had an idea that it would drift in the way that it was drifting, and that if somebody stood up and offered a way out of that drift, then it may well go in his favour. So I think it was in the back of his mind that if the discussion went in the way that it eventually did, then he would make this dramatic intervention.
Well, it was a courageous moment.
He had a lot to lose.
He did, because the point was that he might have knocked out, he might have given McQuaid the knockout before they even got to the election, and he was just saying, "I'm forsaking that opportunity, let's just get out there and vote."
Yeah.
So it was a courageous moment, and...
they would have known, Cookson would have been able to estimate fairly accurately how many votes he was going to get, would he not?
Well, he was saying last week he thought in the high 20s, he ended up with 24. Okay. So I think...
Can I introduce a concept called triangulation?
Mm-hmm.
What Cookson's team did was they triangulated all of the 42 votes. Oh. So that every voter, they had three people around them who would ask or would glean who they were going to vote for.
Right.
So they had three different opinions on every 40, on each of the 42 men.
Interesting.
So that is why. So that was why he was pretty confident beforehand.
Okay. Gazzetta dello Sport.
Did you find that interesting?
No, Slotto, I thought you were about to introduce the concept of it's nearly 8 o'clock and my birthday do kicks off.
Yeah,
in 25
we're going to crack
but
on
anyway.
In a
moment. Rich, what were you going to say?
Gazzetta dello Sport. Their prediction in the on yesterday morning before
Ciro,
Congress. Ciro, our old friend Ciro, who we're going to have in the podcast
knows,
tomorrow.
Yeah, who's the oracle?
He is Oracle, but he called that one wrong. He called it, I think, the other way.
Will he have the face to come on the podcast?
He's an Oracle.
He's got a lot to explain, actually.
He's an Oracle who gets quite a lot wrong.
Oh, Daniel.
Controversial. Did he listen to this before?
Any final thoughts on the UCI Congress? And
no.
Well, not so much on the Congress.
No, sorry.
Apologies. Not on the Congress. On Cookson and what, you know, is this a good thing for cycling?
I think a lot of stuff moves on now, doesn't it? All that stodgy post-Armstrong kind of where's it all going to go? Where's the future Truth and Reconciliation? I can't do it all in one breath. But it all just stopped in the mud, didn't it? And now it's all cleaned away and we can hopefully just shoot along and by the time that the Rio Olympics comes around or something, we'll have an idea of...
One thing that I don't want to dwell too much on at the moment, but the talk of an independent anti-doping agency being set up within cycling, you know, there is a question to be asked whether that is a very convenient way for Cookson and the UCI, as it will be, to wash their hands of a very mucky topic for them and a topic that can cause problems for them when it comes to the next election.
Mm. What do you mean? That they've made a break between the present and the past?
And in the sense that, you know, that was the main issue that brought about the downfall of Pat McQuaid, their dealing with doping, ultimately. And I think it's in the interest of in the best interest of the sport and in the interest of transparency that it does go to an independent agency, but it also suits Brian Cookson as the president because it gets rid of a potentially very contentious issue and an issue that could reflect badly on his presidency.
Mm. Final word on Brian Cookson. He did seem genuinely quite sympathetic for Pat McQuaid last night. He was saying that, you know, Pat's not a bad guy. He said he just questioned some of the people he'd surrounded himself with, and I think he did have some feelings of sympathy.
He did also say that he hoped that Pat would show up at his Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
He said that, did he, in his press conference?
In the press conference.
Well,
I thought was a bit of afterthought.
Yeah, but the, you know, this dossier that has been handed to USADA, there could well be repercussions from that. You know, they will presumably investigate.
If what is said to be in it is genuinely there, then
there could be. We might not have heard the last of Pat McQuaid and Hein Verbruggen.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. For more articles, go to humansinvent.com/cycling.
Here we are in the deserted canteen of the press centre. We haven't got line to see where we are. Well, I'm telling you now, we're in a deserted canteen in the bowels of the Nelson Mandela Forum.
Yeah, it's very Florentine, isn't it?
Last time we did a podcast together, the three of us, we were on the Mega Smeralda. Last night, I was on the Moby Wonder.
Yeah, this is boat-like, isn't it? It's kind of cavernous. How was your boat last night?
Moby Wonder, it was very odd. It was like a floating theme park. Cartoon characters, sort of models of cartoon characters all over the place. And didn't get very much sleep, 1 hour.
You don't look like you got much sleep, Daniel.
What were you playing with the cartoon characters?
Quite tanned, yeah.
No, I just, you know, Slotto, it was very difficult. I didn't fork out for the cabin. I should have forked out, but it was €200.
You were up all night getting piggyback rides by Donald Duck, weren't you?
Come on, let's talk about the race.
The race. Okay, let's look ahead to the men's race. What's going to happen in the men's race? Daniel, and your hostage to fortune here, because people will listen to this after the race, potentially.
Yes, well, a few weeks ago, I suggested that you'd be a fool not to back Fabian Cancellara, but then I very quickly reappraised that view, and I remembered various occasions, and the Strade Bianche from earlier this year particularly stuck in my mind, of a good example of where Cancellara was too strong, and he frightened the living daylights out of every other rider in the race with foolish, almost kind of chest-beating accelerations, which then dissuaded anyone else from wanting to work with him. And I couldn't foresee a similar scenario tomorrow. The same thing happened in Mendrisio.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the strongest rider, it sounds very obvious, but the strongest rider is very likely to win on a course. It's
looking
difficult.
At that race today, and actually the other races, but Maren Voss, and she's maybe a a bad example, but that climb, that steep climb near the finish is crucial.
Horrible,
and I looked at that and I thought Dan Martin, Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Yeah, and it's close enough to the finish.
Yeah. If it's a, because the way the men's race sometimes goes, and it very much depends on how teams ride it. And Great Britain have certainly, with Froome, have been speaking about making it a very, very hard race. So that could influence things. But you know, the last couple of years, I think last year in particular, it's been a big group. Even though it was a hard finishing circuit last year, it was a big old group until the end.
But Daniel, if you look at today's race, surely that's a lesson as to how Cancellara should be dealt with. I mean, Bronzini was the biggest threat to Voss, or that's who the Italians were hoping were going to take her on. But such a fast pace was set by the likes of Voss and the American, even Stevens,
Evan Stevens.
That those sort of the Bronzini type riders were all killed off before they got anywhere near before they even got to the second lap. So they'd established who were the possible winners, and it was all the toughest, hardest riders.
But was Bronzini really one?
Yeah, she was the leader of the time.
Yeah,
team,
but was
allegedly.
She was Voss not just the strongest rider in the race by far?
Yeah, she was, and
she
so,
probably would have rocked, yeah. She probably would have won it if it had been raced the other way. But what it showed was that the races, the hills, the climbs, and that loop is hard enough. If you want to, and the Spaniards and the Italians, presumably, and the British team and the Colombian team, they'll probably want to take out the Sagans and the Gilberts before they get there, and Cancellara.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's... Well, it is very hard. That's not to say... Sometimes there's a misconception that hard and mountainous or hard and hilly are the same thing. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think Cancellara, you know, in Mendrisio, it was a very, very hilly circuit. I think it was almost 4,500 metres of vertical climbing. He was the best climber in that race because he was the strongest rider. So I don't think it's as easy as saying we're going to eliminate a guy like him because he doesn't have the reputation of being such a good climber as the other guys. No?
Forecast rain tomorrow as well.
Yeah.
Could have a bearing.
Any sort of left field names? I've got three. Vichot with the French team. I think they're going to have four protected riders from Barguil as well, who is one of their four protected riders, and Vauclair, and there is one other.
It's funny you should mention this.
Vauclair, that would be interesting.
It's funny that you should mention the French team of young Frenchmen, Daniel.
Yes,
because I was thinking the other day that it was a very strong looking French team, and I was speaking to a French colleague the other day who was agreeing. They have the advantage of not having an obvious leader, but several cards to play.
They won't be expected to do a huge amount.
They won't, absolutely. The pressure's kind of off them. And yeah, Vichot's an interesting one. Is Vichot going well?
He is, and he's also someone for a young rider who tends to go well over long distances.
Mm. He's a great puncher.
He's a finisseur.
You've got to deal with the yeas and nays of Froome, though. All his form suggests that he's not going to be a challenger.
I think he gave us quite a candid interview this week, Owen, where he admitted that the Worlds has not been the big goal that the Tour was, and that he's found it quite difficult.
I quite like to hear that from him, because in the Tour he was so mentally strong and thick-skinned in a way that to have him saying, well, actually I'm a bit humanly fallible and I haven't been able to just nail everything since then, and I, you know, my concentration's wandered and my motivation's gone.
And he went to the Tour.
That's quite nice to hear.
He went to the Tour as such a hot favourite. He'd won everything. He comes here.
Well, he had the confidence before the Tour. He had so many wins racked up. He had the confidence to know that he could do it.
There's a great deal of uncertainty about his form, actually, and I'm really not sure. And I think even speaking to Rod Ellingworth, the British coach, the other day, he was really talking down their chances. He wants the team to ride hard, to make the race really hard tomorrow. But I don't think it's about the outcome. It's about the process for them. He's thinking of Rio. He really wants to take a team to Rio that can win a gold medal, and there's potentially a couple of guys in the team who can make it. There was a late change to the British team with Jonathan Tiernan Locke being withdrawn.
Right.
No explanation given. And Luke Rowe coming in, so that's a strange one. And again, he's somebody you'd want on a hilly circuit.
But again, just because it's hilly doesn't necessarily mean that climb, or it's hard more than hilly, I think.
Yeah,
I think there's a difference. I mean, obviously, it depends how the how it's raced. Another guy who I think might do well is Stibar. And not many people are talking about
very well.
And Pippo. Pozzolato. Pippo is going, he's really going well.
Yeah.
He's not been saying much in the press, which is unlike him. He's been tweeting. He has been tweeting fairly regularly, as he always does. And he will be, he's kind of plan B or C for the Italians tomorrow. They've got Visconti, who in theory should be good on this route. And he's kind of on home roads because he grew up as a cyclist in Tuscany. And Nibali, you can guarantee that Nibali will attack at some point in the race, probably on the penultimate lap or the last lap off the descent of the Fiesole climb, and then get caught, because he always does.
I mean, we've not talked about Spanish at all, but Rodriguez has got to be a contender. He's had a long, hard season. Valverde as well, both those guys have ridden, you know, Tour and Vuelta, and maybe...
Valverde's not winning sprints... in small groups with the same regularity that he wants to be busy.
He's not.
Can we give any attention to the last man to do a stunning achievement in this sport?
Greg LeMond.
Greg LeMond, followed by someone who's probably older than him now, Chris Horner.
Chris Horner?
Yeah.
Is that your left field choice?
Well, he is, just because no one can really understand why he goes as well as he does go, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, he'd probably not be a universally popular world champion.
It would be very hard to deal with.
I don't mean unpopular, but I think I'm not sure that would be.
We just go straight back to the questions of how can you be as good as you are.
I'm not sure that'd be the most appropriate winner for the new Brian Cookson-led era of cycling, but we'll see. He's about the same age as Brian Cookson, isn't
he? Maybe Cookson could bring in a no over 40 sort of rule,
I'm not sure if he can change the rules before tomorrow. He's not Pat McQuaid.
The defending champion, of course, Gilbert.
Philippe Gilbert.
Good. We love the story. We love stories of any kind of civil war at the world. There always is one.
Oh yeah.
And apparently, Greg Van Avermaet and Philippe Gilbert, they historically have not got on very well. So much so that Van Avermaet left Lotto to go to BMC when Gilbert was sort of monopolising the objectives there. And then, hey presto. Was it either 1 or 2 years later, Gilbert then moved in at BMC and Van Avermaet found himself in the same situation. So it's been a recurring theme in his career, and now at the Belgian team, there is a very similar scenario with Van Avermaet. Really? Is going well, wants some freedom, and Gilbert isn't particularly keen on the idea of giving him any.
And Van Avermaet is a reasonable, I mentioned him in the last podcast we get to this, I think he's got a reasonable shout tomorrow as well in the road race.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to mention somebody else there, and it slipped my mind now.
Well, we haven't really done a Colombian. I mean,
Quintana. I shared a Ryanair flight with Quintana from Stansted.
Yeah.
To Pisa. He looked very fit.
He skipped up steps.
He ate a box of Pringles and had a fizzy drink, and he read a book and slept. He had one of these big pillows.
There are always Colombian journalists and commentators in the press room. Phoning their copy or phoning often live radio bulletins in from the press room. There was one sounding very, very excitable today when he was talking about the Colombian prospects tomorrow.
Nicholas Roach rode very well at the Vuelta and I think came out with that good form, won a stage. I think he's a bit of a dark horse tomorrow. The course, some people have told me the course is very similar to the course in Austria, where his father won the world title in 1987.
Yeah.
But you know, this precedent
has
been
set. Were you covering that one, Daniel?
this precedent that has been set of every road race so far being won by a solo fashion. We've not mentioned Peter Sagan.
Sag,
can he win it?
Of course he can.
He's got to be one of the.
It's got to be the favourite.
I only threw that out.
I mean, I'm quite surprised that Cancellara is the bookmaker's favourite on the because
he doesn't win many races.
No, he doesn't have a great record in one day races apart from the Belgian.
I think Sagan is the big favourite. I'd like to throw out Bogue Mallema as well. I think
I'd like to throw him out as well.
He can get up these steep climbs very well, and I think he can win a race as well, as he's proved at the Vuelta.
Another closing.
I'm just sorry. I'm just searching for names. I can.
Is there anyone we haven't mentioned?
Just to cover my ass.
There's 208 riders out. Yeah, there's we'll a couple we haven't spoken about.
Is there a rider in the peloton who we think they deserve the world championship as the apogee of their career, as the kind of crowning glory?
Chris Horner.
And the one major race missing from their Palmarès.
Well, that's what Wiggins said before these things started.
Kind of Colin Montgomery type.
I mean, you would say Cancellara,
the greatest never to have won one.
Yeah.
Cancellara for World Road Race, perhaps. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he'd be a decent shout for that. You know, if you're to ignore his previous indiscretions, Valverde, it's quite surprising that he hasn't won this. I'm not saying that he should, or, you know, I'm not saying he would be a popular winner. I'm just saying that, you know, for a rider with his Palmarès, it's one thing that's missing.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Sean Kelly?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's probably too late for him now.
Yeah, Michele Bartoli.
Yeah.
The announcer on the...
we've got to talk about...
live announcer.
I want to get a little interview with him.
The live announcer today described Marianne Vos as...
a deity.
More than a rider, she's a deity.
The other day during the time trial, there were three men left in the start house...
Is it
the father, the father, the son, the Holy Ghost of time trialing. It's astonishing. Apparently last
year... Is that your Lancashire accent?
Apparently last year he described a breakaway, a lone rider who'd escaped as Osama bin Laden with the chasing group, the US Navy SEALs.
Is this Dave Tao?
What's his name?
Dave Tao.
Don't know, but I'm going to find him tomorrow.
Yeah, he needs a world championship.
I'm going to interview him for the podcast. Definitely.
He's definitely used to call Levi Leipheimer the cottage of Wattage.
Brilliant. Right, on that note, that's my target for tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening. Owen, enjoy your birthday.
I hope to see you later.
Have you got any exciting plans?
Yeah. I'm sorry you didn't get invited, but a lot of us are going out for
this is for the benefit of our listeners, not for me. I know I'm coming to your party.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, any plans? Any plans? You emailed me.
We're going for a coffee with a couple of mates.
Coffee.
Still 0-0 the game.
Okay, Daniel, any plans for Owen's birthday?
I'm going to watch the last 40 minutes of this game, and then I'll rock up later.
Okay,
great. Well, fashionably.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.